We are making our final approach into the topic that we have been beating to death all year long, of in the world and not of the world. This has been a year of trying to understand this particular concept, and if we have learned nothing else over the first 9 months of looking at this, we have learned this. It ain't easy. Because you know what? The wisest man could not do it. Solomon spent his life chasing the wind and never figured out how to live in this world but not become of it. And you know what? God's chosen nation could not do it. With all of their worship celebrations and all of the things that God gave them to keep their focus on God, they still managed to go out and find time on a hillside to worship idols. Boy, the righteous man couldn't do it. I guess you could say his righteousness literally went up in smoke as we watched Lot try to struggle to be righteous, as Peter called him, but yet he ended up in a cave alone, and it just did not work. And for all those that think, well, I'll just religious my way to this, guess what? We just finished this up. For all of their religion, the Pharisees lived very worldly lives. And that's because religion isn't going to do it. You can't put enough rules in place. You can't make enough rituals out there. There aren't enough regulations that you can spread around to say, you know what? I can do this. If I just follow these rules, then I am living in the world, not of the world. And after beating ourselves up for 9 months, I'm sort of starting to think, is it even possible? I mean, maybe this is mission impossible. Maybe there is absolutely, positively no way that as a human being, I can live on this planet and not allow this planet to become my focus. And I would believe that if it wasn't for these guys that we're going to spend the next 8 weeks looking at. Yeah, you know them. We're going to be in the book of Daniel, so if you want to grab a copy of the Bible out of the pew or act and start making your way to Daniel, that's where we're going to be. And we are going to begin to look at these people that lived in this nation called Babylon, and how did they live in the world and not of the world? One word. Stand. They never signed a petition. They never got to vote. And you know what? They never protested for their rights. What they did do is at every turn in their life, they lived their faith. When the world said stop or else, they said fine, we'll choose the or else. When the world tried to punish them, God protected them. They influenced multiple kings and multiple empires. They became people that were respected and often called upon when the world had no answer, even though the world didn't always appreciate their presence, all because they dared to take a stand. Now, I say the word Daniel, and everybody gets all excited, so I want to make sure you understand where we're going in this series. We are going to focus primarily on Daniel and his friends. So if you're thinking, oh, we're going to do a prophecy sermon series, I'm going to skip most of that. All right. If you think we're going to talk about lions and fiery furnaces and all the miracles God worked, we'll read through those, but that's not my focus here, folks. Remember, this is the culmination of what we've been looking at for 9 months, so we want to figure out how did they do it, so we want to look at what they were asked to do. Then we are going to look at how they decided to handle the situation. And then we're going to make some applications to each and every one of us. So where are we going to start? Well, if you're going to do a book study, probably the best place to start is all the way back at chapter 1, verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonian and put it in the treasure house of the house of his God. So if you're thinking, okay, where are we at? Well, we are at that point. Israel has turned its back on God. God has had enough. So God has allowed the nation of Babylon to come in, and Israel has fallen. The Israelites were moved from their precious promised land. So they basically lined them up and they started to escort them out because Babylon had a plan. You know what? If I don't leave you in the territory that you love and I put you wherever I want you, then you have no allegiance to the land you're living in. Therefore, you're not going to be as much problem for me. So they were going to move the Israelites out. And to add insult to injury, the items that they used to worship Jehovah were now placed in a pagan treasure house as souvenirs for the conquest. That's an important fact. Don't forget that. And now, boy, we've seen this term this year, haven't we? The Israelites are going to be forced to live as foreigners and exiles. But that's not the worst part of it. You will be assimilated. Resistance is futile. I'm a Star Trek geek, folks. You knew that had to be coming there somewhere. We're going to read verses 3 through 8, and this is their overall plan. Then the king ordered Ahpraz, the chief of his court officials, to bring into the king a service some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility of young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing an aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language, the literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that, they were to enter the king's service. Among those who were chosen from Judah, Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief official gave them new names. To Daniel, he named him Belshazzar. To Hanani, he Shadrach. To Meshach. And to Azariah, Abednego. So, again, they have a plan. And it isn't just about the land. You see, not only did they want to relocate the citizens of Israel out of their land, they now wanted to change their culture permanently. So what they did is they chose young males from the royal family and nobility. So these would have been the people that the Israelites would have looked at. This is our future. These are our future leaders. These are our future kings and rulers. They would have been from the house of David. And their plan was to make them the king's servants. So you get what they're saying, right? So if these are the best of your best, and these are your former rulers, please now notice your future rulers are now servants to our king. Therefore, since they are servants to our king, then guess what you are? Servants to our king. See, it was not enough that they had taken them out of their land. It was not enough that they had destroyed their temple. Now their future kings were going to be made nothing more than servants. However, they didn't just want to change, just didn't want to make them servants. They wanted to change them completely. So did you catch what they're going to do? They're going to send them to school. They're going to send them to school to learn all about Babylon, and they were going to be trained for 3 years. Our kids are thinking, that's nothing. I've been at school for, 12 years if I'm only to a senior? Or maybe 3 years. So they're going to get a crash course in what it means to be Babylonian. They were to be taught the language and literature of Babylon. And here's the thing. They were even given new names. Talk about stripping somebody's identity. Remember, Jewish names meant something. You were named your Jewish name because it meant something to your parents. So they're going to strip away your identity and they're going to give you a brand new name. And well, they were going to be offered the best that Babylon had to offer. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. And you know what? It is a perfect plan. It is absolutely perfect. Remember, they didn't go after the old fogies. They didn't go after the older people. They went after the younger people. Because it's the perfect plan. Because if I can change your younger people and I can change your future, then eventually all the older people are going to die off and the next generation is going to know only Babylon. Well, it was perfect all except for one small problem. Something the king absolutely, positively never considered. He never considered Daniel and his buddies. So we're going to pick up in verse 8. We're going to go verses 8 through 16. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. Now God had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel, but the official told Daniel, "I am afraid of my lord the king, who has assigned you food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other men your age? The king would then have my head because of you." Daniel then said to the guard, whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with the young men who eat and drink the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance to what you see." So he agreed to this test and tested them for 10 days. And at the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the other men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away the choice food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. Daniel has made a strong decision. It says that he resolved himself. Resolve means to decide firmly on a course of action, a firm determination to do or not do something. This is important. Because if you plan on living in this world and not of this world, folks, you better have some resolve. You better be ready for the fight. Because this is a battlefield of the mind. And Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah decided, no thanks. So I have to wonder, what's the issue? Well, an issue was they would not eat the king's food. Now, I like food. You're going to find that out when we head downstairs a little bit later. I like food. And here they are. They're brought before a banquet table, and there's all this food out there. And they said, "I'm not going to eat." And I just want you to know something. This was not a hunger strike. Okay? They weren't having a protest for equal rights for enslaved Jews. Okay? This was not a hunger strike. You know what? The food quality was not the issue. It wasn't poisoned. It wasn't too salty. It wasn't bad. In fact, it was probably pretty good because this was the best that Babylon had to offer. This was not a health concern. They were not trying to lose weight. They were not on a diet. They did not necessarily think the food was physically bad for them. So what's the issue? The issue is Leviticus chapter 11. God said. God had given the Israelites a very strict dietary rules, and there were many foods they were not allowed to eat. There were some foods they could only eat at certain times, and well, there were some foods that they couldn't eat during certain times. And well, the verse says that they chose not to defile themselves. So you have to get the point here. Here they are, and they're standing in front of the table, and there's all the good food, and they can smell all the food that's going there. There's probably some fried chicken and other things that we really like. And they're all standing there, and their mouth is watering, and they're hungry, and their stomachs are empty. And they look at them, and they're like, God said. There are things on this table that God said I'm not supposed to eat. So now I have to make a decision. Do I do what God said, or do I do what the king wants? Now I want to give you some important notes. They refused to eat, but it does not appear they disrespected the authority. I like the fact Daniel didn't give up and say, "I shall not eat. No eat, no eat, no eat." That's not Daniel's approach here. It says he went to the guard and he respectfully asked permission of the guard. He said, "Hey, look, if you do this, you're going to put me in violation of my own conscience. Can't we work out something here where I can do what God said, and I can still do what you're asking me to do?" I think we missed this. Daniel didn't go out there and try to win the world by making the world submit. In fact, he did just the opposite. He submitted. They chose not to eat, but others from the chosen ones did eat. I think we miss that sometimes. It wasn't just these four guys and a bunch of pagans. It was these four guys, but they had picked other people, and those people did choose to eat. And this is important to us because guess what? It does not appear that they lectured or condemned them for it. You didn't see Daniel getting up anywhere in the book of Daniel and giving out lectures about why you shouldn't eat. He just says, you know what? As for me, no thanks. I'll pass. I'm not going to preach to you. I am going to show to you what it means to do what God said. And at the end of the 10 days, Daniel did not promise to eat. He promised to submit to the punishment for not eating. A lot of times we think Daniel made the deal. You give us 10 days and he tell you what, if God's way doesn't work out, then we'll just go to your table and eat. That's not what Daniel said. Daniel said, hey, look, you do it our way for 10 days, and if it doesn't work out and we're not meeting the qualification, then you know what? Whatever you want to do to us, if you want to kill us, go ahead. We are not going to do it anyway, but God's way, because we are going to take a stand. And here's the thing that a lot of times we miss. God was already at work. Now, God had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel. As we read through Daniel, we absolutely know that God physically showed up in the fiery furnace. Yep, he was there. And we know that it was God that sent the angel to shut the mouths of the lion. Yep, he was there. But we often forget God was working from the moment they took their stand. Not physically in great big ways. It says that he was working on the heart of the guard, the heart of the official, the heart of the person in charge. God is already working. He's just waiting for us to take a stand. So let's make some application for us today. If you want to turn over to 1 John chapter 2, verse 4, whoever says, I know him, but does not do what he commands, is a liar, and the truth is not in that person. So today, the Jewish dietary restrictions have all been set aside. That happened in Acts chapter 10, and I am so happy. Because I can think of a lot of things that were in that Leviticus chapter 11 that said, God said, don't eat. And there are a lot of things on that list that are on my favorite list. Bacon, ham, bacon. Yeah, there are a lot of things on that list that are just part of our diet. So this is not about food, but it was actually never about food, was it? The issue Daniel was having was not about the food on the table. It was about what God said versus what he was being asked to do. See the opportunities I'm presented with versus the action God commanded me? How do I make that choice? Is my God said ahead of what the world says? Am I willing to take a stand? If you're going to live in this world and not of this world, be an effective testimony to this world and bring the light into this world, we must place value on those two words. God said. And I know what you're thinking, because I've heard the argument. I read the same newspapers and I go to the same websites that you guys go to, and I know. The question is never, is it legal? The question is it right? You know, when we start talking about things that are legal these days, if you just go back a few generations, things that are legal today would never be legal a few generations ago. Here's the thing. That which is legal will constantly be changing because who's in charge of the law? Man. The question is it right? And that's a harder question for us, folks. When I began looking at the world, is it right that I do this? What did God say about this? And then I have to make the decision. Do I go to the table? Or do I back away and choose some resolve and not to defile myself and say, you know what? God said, maybe you can do this. I can't. Not because I think I'm better than you. It's because God said. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 3-5, this is the way Paul put it. For though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does. The weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. Well, there is something that we should remember. You cannot pass laws to do what Daniel is doing. As we read through the book of Daniel, you will never see Daniel go to the king and say, "Will you please pass a law to help me?" You know why? That's man's way to do this, not God's way. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. We demolish arguments of every pretense that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. We take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. I want you to pay really close attention to those words in yellow. Now, a lot of times we think this means we're supposed to go out and argue for Christ. Remember what I told you, this is a battlefield of the mind. I'm not trying to change your mind. I'm trying to make my mind conform to what God said. It is not my job to go out and convince you that this is what God said. You can read what God said for yourself. It's my job to give you the testimony of what it means to live what God said. And so in my mind, I have to be willing to demolish the arguments and every pretense. There can never be an argument about what God said. If God said it, that settles it. You know, we have that kiss on God said it, and I believe it, and that settles it for me. It doesn't matter. God said it, that settles it. Your belief, that's your choice. But it still says, God said. So the argument in my own mind has to start, has to stop. It says that we need to set up ourselves to what God tells us to do. And I like what it says. It says, every little thought that I have, every thought, if it's one that doesn't line up with what God says, what does it say? I have to take it captive. Now, again, this does not mean that I go out and try to change the world and say, you know what, y'all need to pass some better laws so this God said thing is a lot easier. Their job is not to pass laws to make our life easier. It's our job to decide what God said and then decide whether or not it's more important for me to live by it. Daniel took a stand at that table. And you get it. He's forming the boundaries for the rest of the book. If we don't stand at the table on what God said, then the rest of the book does not matter. Does it really matter if you bow to the altar? If it's what God said is not important? Does it really matter whether or not you pray or not? If God said it really isn't that important? Is it really important if God said it and I'm not willing to accept it and do it? And you'd think that old King Nebuchadnezzar, which had a propensity for having a really bad temper, he'd be very upset. Oh no. Their stand began to change the king. It began to change the world. The king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. So they chose to become servants of this king. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in the whole kingdom. Notice, they refused to eat, but the king, well, he took the they did take the opportunity to learn their culture. Daniel didn't say, you know what, I'm going to just live in silence. I'm going to go move up to the hillside. I'm going to be a monk. I don't want any of this Babylonian influence in my life. Daniel said, oh, no. Teach me everything you want to know about your culture because you realize what you're doing, right? You're arming me. You're letting me know about your world, and you're letting me know exactly which way I'm going to have to live my life to live in this world but not of the world. Then they came before the king, and he was so impressed, even though they still didn't eat his food. He took them into his service. And you know what? King, you have no idea what you've just done. King, you have lost this battle on square one and you don't even know it. Because now what you've done is you've taken 4 men that have resolved, I am not going to defile myself. We are going to do this God's way. Or you know what? You can go ahead and put me to death now. You can do it any way you want to do it, but I will not be moved. When they took their stand, the king brought them in. And they're going to continue standing and standing and standing. They're going to watch kings fall and kings rise and empires fall and empires rise. And Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are going to stand for God. And they changed their world. But it began at the table. It began with the resolve that I am going to do what God said, regardless of what the world tells me is legal, regardless of what the world tells me is what I'm supposed to be doing. And I guess here's the question. Does your life stand out like that? I got to tell you, I would say probably 90% of the time, mine doesn't stand out like that. This was convicting for me to read because you know what? This is the stand that I should be taking. I should be taking it so that my kids can see it. I should be taking it so that my church can see it. I should be taking it so my coworkers see it. But you know what I like to do is I like to walk right up to that line, snuggle up to it as close as I can get, and maybe every now and then put my toe right over the line and say, but this foot's still here, God. And you realize what I'm doing, right? I'm straddling the fence. There was no fence straddling for Daniel. He was on one side of the fence with God, and the rest of the world, while he interacted them with them and loved them and showed them and demonstrated and even testified to them. He said, you know what? As long as you're not doing it God's way, there'll always be a difference between us.